Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, April 10th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to have a spoiler-free conversation about Christopher Landon's newest movie, Drop, and we'll present an interview with director Christopher Landon. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
And staff writer Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, I want to make it crystal clear right at the top that this episode is not going to spoil anything at all about this movie beyond what is in the trailers. We're recording this a little early, and at this point, I have not even had the chance to see the film yet, although I'm very intrigued by the marketing, and I'm especially intrigued by Megan Fahey, who I know from The White Lotus Season 2, leading the charge here. So let's start there. BJ, what did you think about Megan Fahey as the lead of this movie?
Oh, she is incredible. I think that The White Lotus is probably most people's introductions to her, but she's been working consistently for a while. I also am a huge fan of her work on Broadway. She was in Next to Normal. Shout out to all my musical theater geeks out there. She's absolutely fantastic. And she was, I think, like the most underrated person in season two of White Lotus. So seeing her have the chance to completely dominate a film and be at the center was such a joy because she's great. And I hope that this movie is what makes everyone else in the industry go, oh, wow, we're completely underutilizing her. She should be a megastar.
Yeah, Ryan, you and I were talking on a relatively recent podcast about how we think sort of mid-budget movies should still be made because they're important for the industry and they're important for actors like this to get a shot like this, to sort of graduate from TV level up to the big leagues, as it were, even though that line is blurrier than it's ever been. But you know what I mean. So what did you think about Megan Fahey in this film?
She's fantastic. I think this is the first thing I've ever seen her in, you know, because I'm not much of a TV guy. I haven't really watched White Lotus, but yeah, she's phenomenal in it. And the movie completely rests on her shoulders. It's a very contained movie, and it's pretty much a two-hander for the most part with like some, people weaving in and out. But yeah, I mean, if she's not good, it's one of those things where like, if they don't get this casting right, if she's not good in this movie, it falls apart. And, mercifully she's very good in it and it does not fall apart. But, yeah, I think like I'm at that point now where having seen this, I'm like, whatever she does next, my eyebrow will raise because she's in it. And that's probably the best thing you can say for someone in a movie like this.
So what do you think about the movie overall, Ryan?
I really liked it. Kind of stealing a line from our own Jacob Hall here speaking to me about Heretic last year. It's like a 10 out of 10, 8 out of 10 movie. And that like it's not a 10 out of 10 movie. It's just like an old school a movie for movie's sake. And I say that in a really loving way. Like it does exactly what it sets out to do, executes it very well, and it's just a fun time. Like, it doesn't have to be anything profound or whatever. Like, there's good stuff in it, and there's interesting ideas in it, but it is just trying to be, like, a fun and entertaining movie and definitely, like, executes that in a way that I think is, like, really satisfying just because it feels like everything has to have some crazy reason to exist now or some crazy hook, and this is just more like, it's got a good hook, don't get me wrong, but it is just like a good movie. And I just miss that like sort of idea of like the good thing that I saw that Friday night. And I can't wait to see what I get to see next Friday night. You know, that sort of idea.
Yeah. So BJ, what'd you think about it overall?
Oh yeah, this is an absolute blast and a half. This is the type of movie that I love to catch in the theaters and the type of movie that I wish that we made more of. I also think that this is creatively very much in the wheelhouse of what Chris Landon used to write in his earlier work that people are probably a little less familiar with. I think most people know him from like Freaky and Happy Death Day movies, and that's the sort of style of filmmaking they're used to from him, but they don't recognize that he's always been into like a lot of these thrillers. And so getting to see him, you know, add this to his resume while he's already, you know, far more in the public eye, I think is really great for him. So it was nice to see him like, you know, dive back into this world. But yeah, like it's a nice tight thriller, you know, pretty for the most part, like one location, for the most part, a two-hander. And the people that pop in that are not part of our main duo are very entertaining and very, very memorable. Love seeing Jeffrey Self here as the waiter. So hilarious. He's responsible for some of my favorite lines in the movie. But yeah, it's it's a blast. This movie rocks.
I was just looking at his filmography because you were talking about some of his earlier stuff, and I was wondering if I'd seen anything. And I totally forgot that he has a screenwriting credit on Disturbia, the Shia LaBeouf Rear Window
yes,
remake from
exactly.
2007. Yeah, so that must be sort of in the line of what you're talking about. He also made this movie called Burning Palms back in 2010. I think that was his feature directorial debut. And it was like this sort of, I don't know, did you ever see that movie, BJ?
Yeah, and like adding to that, he's also he did a couple episodes I think of Dirty Sexy Money, which is yep. very much like kind of a thriller, but yeah, Burning Palms is very much like it's more like satirical thriller than anything, but like it's very clear that Landon is a guy who like loves kind of Hitchcockian De Palma style thrillers, but at the same time he's like he's a weird guy, like in like positive, like complimentary weird guy. And so his sense of humor is really dark and weird. Yeah, I really, really like it. Also Lake Bell is really great in Burning Palms. And she's another one like Megan Fahey where I'm like, we're just underutilizing her.
Yeah. Okay. So Ryan, I wanted to ask you, this seems like the drop. This movie seems like the type of high concept premise that might look good in a trailer, but if it's not executed perfectly, it starts to stretch credulity a little bit and you kind of roll your eyes and go like, all right, give me a break. So did this movie ever hit that point for you? And even if it did, was it executed on a high enough level that you were able to kind of overcome whatever that feeling might have been?
So I can only speak for me, and I think maybe people that have listened to this podcast long enough know my tastes. If you want to go back and listen to everybody else's top 10 list last year and compare mine to everybody else's on staff, probably going to be a little different. I say that to say that like I'm pretty forgiving with like popcorn movies because I just love this stuff and I want to like them. And I miss plot holes. I like, it's just not what I'm looking for. It's not the end. So for me, this movie absolutely never jumped the shark of like losing the premise, stretching it too thin. But I also think that's a credit to like the actors at play here and, you know, sort of making the most out of that contained concept. Because I even like, not to spoil what we're going to hear in the interview, but I did ask Landon about that because that my concern heading into this movie was that it was one of those trailers that felt like it gave everything away. And I asked him about that and he was like, yeah, look, I gotta be, you know, like he didn't have any control over what's in that trailer necessarily, but also it does not, there is more to it than is in that trailer, I will say, because I actually talked to Chris before the premiere that night, so I hadn't seen the movie when I talked to him, and so I actually didn't know, but you know, it did have a lot more to chew on, like I don't know if I lost the plot of your question there, but yeah, it I guess in short, like, no, it doesn't like wear itself too thin, I guess.
Okay. Well, yeah, BJ, I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that, because again, like, there's a moment in the trailer where I've been kind of trying to keep relatively spoiler free on this, and what that means for me is like halfway through trailers, if I'm interested, I'll either turn it off if I'm watching it on my computer, or if I'm in a theater, I kind of like look away or like try not to pay attention or kind of like watch between my fingers or something. But I did notice that there's this moment in the trailer where like the glass blows out and she's like hanging off the side of a building or something. And I was wondering if, because I was so hooked by the first part of the trailer, I was wondering if that was, as Ryan said, kind of like jump the shark moment. But I wanted to ask you, BJ, if you thought that kind of where this movie goes ever made you kind of like scoff a little bit, even if it was ultimately a good time.
So I was able to see Drop before they even had a trailer for it, because I wrote about it for Fangoria, and obviously print runs on a different schedule than online publication. So they hadn't done their like marketing material yet. So when I did see that moment in the trailer, I was like, huh. I was like, I felt like that would have been something maybe they'd want to save. But in the context in the trailer, you have no idea how they got to that point, and that is the most exciting part of it. So if you saw that and you're like, do they jump the shark on this? That seems weird. Personally, I don't think that they did. And I think if anything, people are going to be way more excited when that moment hits, because this is a thriller. It is a little bit of a mystery. And so you'll be putting those pieces together. And then it becomes, instead of like a shocking, oh my God, can you believe this moment? It becomes like a hell yeah, it's that moment's time that I think people will be on board with.
Awesome. Okay, so we're going to wrap up here pretty soon. But Ryan, I just wanted to kind of open the floor to you if there was any other aspect of the movie that you wanted to praise here or talk about or say that it rubbed you the wrong way or anything, really. So just, yeah, the floor is yours.
Yeah, there are a couple quick things. So for one, and again, you'll hear a little bit about this in the interview, but I think that Christopher Landon deserves some credit for being one of the guys who was out there fighting to like have original ideas on the big screen. You know, credit to Blumhouse for working with him. And, you know, but between like the Happy Death Day movies and Freaky, which was maybe the movie that was done the dirtiest by the pandemic, like he is out there really trying to like get original stuff on the screen. And, you know, I have nothing but respect for that. And I think he's very good at it. And then the other thing that I would say, I didn't see It Ends With Us, but Brandon's, how do you say it? Sklenar? Is that how you say his name? The other like kind of co-lead here, the guy. My God, is he charming and handsome and deserves to be a movie star. He is great. And yeah, like I completely see like why you would now look at him as like a next big male movie star. Like he kind of has that quality to him. And I certainly hope he gets some bigger opportunities here along with Megan Fahey, because yeah, they're both just like phenomenal. But this was the first thing I think I'd seen him in. And there was just something about him where he had that thing where I'm like, oh, hello, Mr. Handsome. And just kind of like, he just, you know, he has that striking quality about him. So I'm really like hopeful. I'm leaving this movie, I'm curious to see where both of them go, because I just was so like wowed by those performances.
He's on a 1923, the Yellowstone prequel. So a lot of people are, not us, but a lot of other people are probably very familiar with him as Spencer Dutton.
Excellent. Okay, so BJ, same question to you, or same open floor policy to you here. Anything that you wanted to mention about this movie?
Yeah, this movie's a lot of fun. I think this is a movie to definitely watch in theaters with a lot of your friends. Like, bring a group. I think this is a fun group outing movie. And yeah, turn off your AirDrop availability, because I've had people AirDrop me some pretty crazy shit. And if this PSA isn't enough for you, this movie definitely will be.
Excellent. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and get into Ryan's interview with director Christopher Landon.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
First off, Chris, so good to meet you.
Likewise, nice shirt.
Thank you so much. This is my, I'm 3 days in and I'm already tired.
No, trust me.
So first off, like, should mention pre-premiere tonight. How are you feeling? Just how you doing?
I am somewhere between, like, total elation and abject terror. and it changes every minute for me. I'm really excited to finally get to put this out there and see it with a really big audience, especially this audience, because you know, this is like the coolest festival I think in the world. And I love the audiences here. I lived here a long time ago.
Oh, did you?
I did. And so I've been part of this cinema community for a long time. And so I'm excited to kind of be back here. So yeah, a lot of feelings. It's like, it's very emotional for me.
Well, and I think one thing you know, I don't know if you get enough credit for this in recent years. Like, it's tough to get... Good answer. It's tough to get original stuff made, like, especially now, and you kind of have managed to get original stuff across the finish line.
Yeah.
But how hard is that with a movie like this, like, particularly right now, like, post-pandemic, post-strikes, like...
It is harder than it's ever been, and, yeah, it's I'm very sad that at a very difficult time, everyone panicked and did things that changed the behavior of audience members.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways, irreversibly so, but,
agreed.
And so that's a bummer, but I think, you know, I think people are slowly warming back up to the idea of, like, we can't have nice things if you don't take care of them.
Yeah.
You know? And so I am hoping that, you know, and I do think that people still appreciate the experience of going to a movie. And this is the perfect movie for an audience. Like, it's such a fun communal experience to have. And so I'm hoping that people are gonna show up. I think we have two amazing stars that are on the rise.
Yeah.
That I think helps. I think we have a really clean and exciting premise that helps, and our certain relatability since we're all chained to these fucking things. And so I'm hoping, like, all the, and more than anything, I think word of mouth is still the best weapon.
It is.
That you can have. And so I'm praying that people like the movie and talk about the movie, especially after tonight.
But I mean, even look at, like, Brandon, you know, when you get, It Ends With Us last year.
Yes.
How stoked were you when that happened? And you're like, this is my movie.
It was both amazing and then became something terrifying. you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, it's so funny because I knew of the movie because he had just finished filming it when I cast him, but I didn't know anything about that movie.
Right.
Like, it's not my wheelhouse.
Sure.
So it came out of left field for me, and I think for a lot of people, the success of it. It was definitely a blessing.
So you've worked with Blumhouse quite a bit, and you worked with Blumhouse, you know, years ago, and you've worked with Blumhouse now.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Blumhouse has had to change as the business has changed, you know, before Jason was like, $5 million, go make your movie, whatever. So, you know, just because I'm such a proponent of, like, I don't know if Blumhouse gets enough credit for being, like, a purveyor of original cinema.
Yeah.
But, like, how much has it changed working for them over the years, or has it not? Like, is it, like...
I think that their mission has maintained, you know, I think they still really do strive to make original stuff, and they like to take risks. They're the only risk takers, I think, out there, to be honest. You know, unless you're talking about the deep, deep pockets of a couple places, you know, like Amazon or Netflix, which they do take certain risks. I don't know what they are. They're algorithmic risks. I don't know.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think that what they've been able to really maintain and protect is, you know, original films, and also protecting filmmakers and their vision. You know, and that's still the best and the greatest reason to go and work with them. And it's why I continue to go back again and again, because you just have freedom. You have autonomy. They don't bother you. They don't tell you what to do. It's very collaborative. And it's your movie, for better or for worse, you know?
Right.
And I think that's a great thing to have, you know, when most things are made by committee now.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I do have to, and I only ask this because I'm certain the answer is a good thing. The trailer is great, but it feels like one of those trailers where it's like, did they just show you the whole movie?
Totally.
And like, but my suspicion is that that's not the case. So like, how do you, like, is that something you're involved in? Like, do you get to cut the trailer? Do you
No. So marketing is, like, completely separate. They have, they have their own budgets. They have total autonomy on their side. It's interesting because, first of all, it's a really tricky movie because it is ultimately a single location movie for the most part. And it's a lot of people sitting at tables. So it's not like, oh shit, that's exciting, you know, in a trailer, right? So they kind of have to throw the kitchen sink in a situation like that, because their job, like, my job is to make a good movie.
Yeah.
And their job is to get people to show up.
Right.
And so if they're going to throw as many things from the movie as they can, so be it. What we are very much able to protect completely. And it was a universal, not the company, I mean, a group thing was that, like, we were going to very much protect the actual mystery of the movie.
Yes.
Which is what it is ultimately about. And so there are still a lot of surprises left in the movie for people. But yeah, I mean, you have to find that balance of, like, you know, what do you need to show to get butts in seats?
Right.
Cause it is a business.
100%.
Yeah. But look, the people at Universal, they're the best to work with because they really do listen to filmmakers. And if there is something in there that you hate, they will take it out.
That's cool.
And they did. Cause there were a few things I was like, please, dear God, don't do that.
It's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Well, cause and I've always kind of maintained, like, people, look, don't get me wrong, I'm pretty spoiler averse, but at the same time, I'm like, look, if the movie's good, it should still hold up to.
And that's true. And like, it's funny, like, even when we found that audiences who saw something in a trailer or whatever, they reacted the same way.
Yeah.
In the first viewing. So it kind of ultimately doesn't matter, as long as you're not ruining shit for them.
Right.
Or if you're misleading them. That's another thing. That's where marketing for me gets problematic. It's when they're afraid of something.
Yeah.
And so they try to mislead the audience into believing it's totally a different movie. And that's where I think you get into trouble.
That's never, but I, so many times I'm a big box office guy and you see, like, so many times, like, failure sort of follows, like, people being misled. And, like, that is absolutely a true thing.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you're going to be asked about this a ton, but I do have a very specific question at this point as a big fan of the Happy Death Day movies. You definitely set up a third one. Mm-hmm. That was handful of years. Could you even do it now? Like, is it because everyone aged out of your idea?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay. You so could still.
I could do the idea anytime because it's not set on that day.
Okay.
It's meant to be years.
It is. Okay. So you could, because that was one of my only
things.
We could do it now.
We could do it in 5 years. We could do it in 10 years. But, I mean, I think the concern now is that, like, you know, are we just past the whole franchise's expiration date, you know?
Right.
Is it just too long in the tooth now? I don't know.
Yeah. But
we would do it. Jess and I talk about it all the time.
I have to imagine you do.
Yeah, we love making them together, and we loved the third idea because it, and again, for me, it's always like, if you're going to make a sequel of any kind, it has to have a reason to exist. I know a lot of filmmakers say this, but I feel like they don't always mean it. it has to have a reason to exist beyond money.
Yes.
You know? And so for us, there was still more story left to tell for Tree.
Yeah. Is it ever one of those things where, like, you just do, like, the William Gibson Alien 3 thing at some point? You just do, like, a graphic novel or something? Have you thought about that?
I really have because I think it would be a lot of fun, and I think there are enough fans out there that would appreciate that. So I think if that's the sort of path, I think we're still holding out some kind of tiny kernel of hope that maybe Universal will wake up one day and be like, we want this.
Right.
But yeah.
The streaming numbers one day will be like,
yeah. Who knows?
So I know I gotta let you go in a second, but I have to say, I adored Hard Eyes. Like, I know that's not what we're here to talk about, but I have to, like, I loved it.
I love that.
Every ounce of my slasher loving heart loved it. But I do have to ask, was that originally something that you intended to direct, or was it always kind of Josh's movie?
No, it was always going to be Josh's movie.
Okay.
When I came onto that project, funny enough, I was still in development and sort of soft prep on Scream.
Oh, really? Okay.
And they brought that project to me because they felt like there was a lot of potential with this sort of, like, idea of a serial killer who targets couples on Valentine's Day. And I immediately saw the opportunity to make, like, a really gory rom-com.
Yeah.
So that was what I pitched back to them. I was like, this should be a violent fucking rom-com. and so for me, it was just, and everybody knows I love a mashup. There's no secret there, but I'd never made a rom-com.
Right.
And so I was really excited about writing that kind of a movie and also producing, but I also felt like I've done that a bit, you know? And so I didn't want to be that one trick pony, and I'm such a big fan of Josh's work. And so it just seemed like a no brainer to kind of, and I don't have an ego about that stuff. So I love to work with other directors.
Yeah.
I do it all the time.
Yeah. And Josh rules. I'm so happy for him. Like,
I
it was
mean,
such
he
a good,
he crushed it.
He did
an amazing job. The cast was amazing. Everything about that movie, I think, works in such a quirky, fun way. So I'm really, and we're, you know, we're this is top secret, but, like, we have a really good sequel.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That sucks that we can't talk about that more. No, because it's funny that you say that, like, you wanted to make a rom-com, because the thing that I said walking out of it is that it's like, what happened is it felt like someone wrote a good rom-com script, mm-hmm. like a Netflix rom-com script, mm-hmm. and then they said, why don't we throw a slasher villain in here and see what happens?
And that's what it was. Yeah. And that's what the appeal was for me. It was like, how do we make this really functional, entertaining rom-com, but this murderer keeps invading it, you know? And so there was this old movie called Foul Play that I loved when I was a kid.
I like Foul Play.
Yeah. That was one of the big inspirations for me for writing.
Anyways. That's awesome. Well, dude, oh my God. Thank you so much, man. I'm so excited for the movie tonight.
All right. That'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all these stories that we mentioned on the show at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I know I say that at the end of every episode. It really, really, really does help us out a lot. So please do that if you haven't done it. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We really appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.